played on the school football team in Primary 7. There were 12 of us available to play, and I alternated with one other kid as substitute. The day they took the school photo, I wasn't picked for the match, and there were only 11 jerseys to go around, so I mumped off somewhere in a classic 11-year-old sulk. Then Mr. Sadler came and found me and ordered me into the photo. Somewhere in the world, that photo still exists. I'm the one in the obviously different yellow football top, with enormous hair and a foul expression. I only remember one game we played, down at the now long-departed Ash Pitches at the bottom end of Duke's Road, against another local school. It was one of our team who lived down there in that area, which meant we were able to use his house as a changing room, and they had the inside gossip in the opposition. There was only one player of theirs of any interest, a lad who played in midfield, a large ginger kid who'd been spawned in the pits of Isengard. Being a ginger kid myself, he was one of my people, so I thought we might have some sort of competitive bond. As it was, we only once came near each other in the field. I ran into him, causing him to stop and me to bounce about 30 yards away onto my arse. I remember Mr. Sadler awarding him the foul, and at the time, I rationalised this as probably the correct decision. Possibly, however, Mr. Sadler was as scared of the large ginger kid as everybody else. After the game, we all went back to Chick's house to change. His parents went home and Mr. Sadler had gone off to lie in his teacher coffin. And then, as we got our stuff together in the front room, out the window we saw the ginger kid arrive at the front gate. He didn't come in. He just stood there, waiting for the wildebeest to emerge. Like all true bullies, he was accompanied by a couple of scrawny henchmen. We cowered in the sitting room. 12 of us, 3 of them, the odds somehow in our heads stacked in their favour. Finally, we found the mettle to leave, and we filed solemnly and silently out into the bright afternoon, with me somewhere in the middle. One by one, the cohort of my teammates and friends inched past the ginger kid, and he let them go. Then, as I walked through the gate, he took one step to the side, stood in my way. Nothing was said at first. The rest of the team moved past and were off. They didn't run, but as they walked casually along the street, you could feel the wave of relief. It was reminiscent of one of those moments in a wildlife documentary. The wildebeest are flying around in a mad panic, and then suddenly the line brings one of them down, and the rest of the fleeing animals instantly stop, turn, casually look at what's happening, and immediately you hear the cry going up. "It's all right, they've got Uncle Stan, we can relax." I was never bullied at school, which was always a surprise. I was a pussy with stupid big hair and absolutely ripe for it. Never happened. I didn't understand it until years later, when my wife pointed out that I permanently wear a fuck-off expression and no one anywhere wants to speak to me about anything ever, bullying or otherwise. This moment was the one very, very minor exception, and I wilted pathetically. 40 years later, the incident plays out much better than my head. I tell the ginger kid to get the fuck out of my face, and he backs down with a whimper. I walk after my mates, and they are all completely in awe of my shit. What actually happened was the following short exchange. "Ginger kid, you fouled me." "Yes." "Say you're sorry." "I'm sorry." "You could do it again." "No." Then the ginger kid stepped aside and I scurried off after my friends, and when I reached them, nothing was said of the matter. I was embarrassed by my pusillanimity, as I expect they were embarrassed by theirs. I never saw that large ginger kid again, but then I've never been in prison. In this week's episode of the podcast, critics are already describing us a guy talking for 20 minutes or thereabouts, a reading from the 9th novel in the Barney Thompson series, Curse of the Clown. Here's the blurb, written by the high-priced copywriting staff here at Long Midnight Publishing. "The Curse of the Clown. It's all fun and games until somebody loses a penis. A fiendish, fell figure, face painted like a demonic clown, emerges from the Scottish barbershop community. Murder in mind, revenge to take, havoc to wreak. The first to fall is an old customer, then the diabolical quaffing clown turns his attention to the barbers. In ones and twos they gather at the annual Scottish barbershop convention in Perthshire, unaware a maniacal monster lurks in their midst. Among them is Barney Thompson, mild-mannered hairdressing genius, cursed to walk the earth in the company of butchers, ne'er-do-wells and psychopaths. as the killer strikes and strikes again and again. With every swipe of the razor, he comes one step closer to Barney and the men of the Milkport Tonsorium. Penises are severed. Blood is spilled and screams bounce from wall to wall, echoing impotently into the night. Curse of the Clown, the ninth book in the Barney Thompson trilogy, is the most gruesomely hilarious yet. In this scene, Barney, Keanu and Igor, trapped in a Perthshire hotel, attempt to clutch at normality as the barbershop convention continues. Barney, Keanu and Igor had entered the main exhibition space. It wasn't, truth be told, a very big space, not when compared to the great exhibition halls of the day, the O2, the NECC Shanghai, the Great Hall of Kazadum. Nevertheless, the size of space was appropriate. There were never that many delegates in the first place, and then when those who had chosen to leave were factored in, even the ballroom of the Comrie Hydro seemed a little too substantial for the exhibitors of the Scottish Barbershop Convention. The men were watching a barber with a pair of scissors cutting a wig. Barney wondered if originally he was supposed to have models, but the models had fled the scene. Models, he presumed, would be cheaper than wigs. Maybe he just used old wigs that he'd found on eBay for a couple of pounds. He was talking constantly to his audience in a manner that implied the audience before him was a great host. Either side of him, in what was quite a small stand, there was a giant pair of scissors of indeterminate material. The branding behind him, written in bold and brassy red, stated, "Let the scissors do the work." There were several signs for a Glen Eagle scissors, and one more large splurge of hype spewed onto the wall, "Where quality meets excellence." Barney found himself staring at this notice. "Where quality meets excellence." So the words of the barber salesman drifted by him. "Where quality meets excellence." Didn't quality automatically meet excellence? Could you have quality without some degree of excellence? He found himself trying to think of examples of something that could be of poor or average quality while being excellent at the same time. The phrase, "where the sea meets the water," came into his head. He felt an elbow on his side and looked round at the nudge to find Igor indicating for them to look at the salesman. "Sir?" Barney was brought back from his daydream to find he, Keanu and Igor were the only listeners, the few others who'd been standing there having moved on. "Would you like to try the scissors, sir? Only by working with the majesty of the Glen Eagles Eclat 7000 can you sense the power of its ultra-cobalt stainless steel blades, augmented by seaborgium, yttrium and delirium, with state-of-the-art all-new material, barbershopium, created in Australian laboratories using a new process of bastardisation and carbonisation, which produced the world's first hairdressing-specific metal." "What?" said Barney. The man smiled, a quick eye movement to include Keanu and Igor, then back to Barney. "Here at Glen Eagle Scissors, we mix an optimal heat convection with sub-zero quench techniques to ensure long-term blade durability and perfection. The Eclat 7000 is the latest Glen Eagles product to push the boundaries of what scissors can achieve, combining ancient Japanese forging traditions with the latest in high-tech American engineering." "Can we go back to the bit about pushing the boundaries of what scissors can achieve?" asked Barney, interrupting the flow. "Certainly," said the salesman enthusiastically. He'd been here for 2 hours already, and Barney was the first person to show enough interest to ask a question. "How exactly do the Eclat 7000 push the boundaries of what scissors can achieve?" The salesman held the scissors towards Barney, handle first. "Give him a go and find out." "All you're doing is cutting hair," said Barney. "How is that pushing the boundaries? They represent the ultimate in handmade, bespoke, hirsutological sophistication." Barney held his gaze. The salesman clicked the scissors. There was a bright confidence in his eyes, but slowly under Barney's stare, the confidence began to wither. This wasn't just anyone looking at him as though all his marketing talk was idiotic drivel. This was a man who'd lived the most extraordinary life of any barber in recorded history. He didn't talk this kind of hogwash to Barney Thompson and expect to impress him. "How do the scissors push the boundaries?" asked Barney coldly. A moment. The salesman plundered his knowledge bank for anything he could use. "Studies show that haircuts using these scissors take an average 2 minutes less than haircuts performed with other, more pedestrian scissors." "Which studies?" "I don't have that information to hand," said the salesman, his confidence creaking at the edges. "How much per pair are the Glen Eagles Eclat 7000? This was information the salesman usually only felt comfortable divulging when he knew he had the customer hooked. Otherwise, he was opening himself up to ridicule. Nevertheless, he wilted further beneath Barney's glare, and the price came reluctantly spilling from his lips. £1,999. The words hung in the air. Igor's mouth was open, but he couldn't even bring himself to say arf. "Fuck," said Keanu, amused. "And?" said Barney. "99 pence, said the salesman, his voice small. "And 99 pence, said Barney. "You're charging £2,000 for the pair of scissors. How does that make you feel?" The salesman didn't answer. He was beginning to look a little haunted. Barney, a deal more empathic than he'd been in years gone by, suddenly felt bad for being the confidence delegate who made the salesman look into the mirror of capitalist dissatisfaction. Not so bad he was about to buy the scissors, but bad enough that he knew it was time for them to move on. The salesman could regain his self-assurance with some other poor group of suckers if he could find any. "What a shit job," thought Barney. "We'll leave you to it," he said, voice low. The quality scissor salesman's eyes were hollow as he looked at the three barbers. That was it for him. Barney had meant to crush him, but the fact was that he'd been standing there spewing marketing drivel into the vacuum of the conference hall. He'd been called out, and he would never again have confidence in using phrases such as sub-zero quench techniques. The men nodded uncomfortably at him and were on their way. They continued their slow progress around the hall. There was a row of stands purely of scissor salesmen, phrases such as "the only scissors you'll ever need" and "forged in the dwarvish mines of Middle Earth" and "the scissors that cut hair without cutting hair" and "say hello to the hairgasm," tossed around like Floridian yachts in a hurricane. The next aisle had further haircutting equipment, and the one after that had customers' chairs and other requirements of the modern barbershop. On and on, one stand leading to the next, one aisle, one row, each tipping over to the next in line. They heard the man at the end of row 7 before they saw him, as he was tucked around a corner a little, and then they were upon him, and he was standing before the small stand, a book in his hand, reading. The stand itself was simply furnished, populated with stacks of books, and he had a banner across the top that read, "The Barber Poet." Barney and Igor exchanged a mournful glance, as they had been doing repeatedly throughout the depressing walk of doom, while Keanu looked warily upon a fellow writer. He had competition, and he himself had never thought of manning a stand at a convention while reading out his work to the passing masses. "These lands, these barbershop lands we inhabit," said the poet, back straight, book held before them at eye level, projecting boldly to his audience of three who had just happened upon him. He was clearly, nevertheless, doing his spiel regardless of whether anyone was paying attention. They had noticed it with the eye-wateringly expensive scissor salesman. It was the same with the poet. It had been the case at several stands in between. "In these bad lands we stand, shoulder to shoulder, barbers forever, for better, for bolder, kings of the scissors, servants of none, we carry the scars from the battles we've won. I stood with the greats, I travelled the road, I followed my sweetheart wherever she goed. The love of a woman, the sound of the sea. Some gin for your oyster and muffins for tea." As he continued, Keanu leaned in towards Barney a little more closely. "See my books? They're better than this, right?" "Everything you do is better than this," said Barney. "In fact, remember that time a few years back when you accidentally stabbed old Tartington in the back of his head and he had taken to hospital to get stitched up? But not before he'd lost 3 litres of blood and nearly died, and then he sued us, and our insurance had to pay out £750,000. Keanu looked sideways at Barney. "Aye," he said ruefully, "that, as haircuts go, was better than this is at whatever it's supposed to be. So it's total gibberish. I mean, I was worrying I might have been missing something." "No, you're good," said Barney, his voice low. "It is total gibberish. It comes with the territory. There's no such actual thing as poetry, just people talking shite in iambic pentameter." They watched the poet for another few seconds, in which he matched the words, "the cost them a wag with colostomy bag," then they turned away and walked around the corner to the next row. "You think you could be the quaffing clown? I mean, that guy writes those little verses, right?" Said Barney, "suppose the police might look into it, but it'd be pretty stupid of him." "Maybe he's balls out confident," said Keanu, mind starting to drift. Yet they knew it wasn't him. There was just something about the barber poet. The only thing he'd ever killed was language. the head of the next row, down which they could see a total of three other people walking past desperate stalls of barbershop paraphernalia, they stopped and took a moment. "You know, fellas," said Keanu after several seconds of silence, "I'm not entirely sure coming here was my best suggestion." Barney smiled. He was finding the whole thing over the top, yet really it wasn't actually that over the top. He could imagine the hell of a giant American barbershop convention where Comic-Con met 1920s Chicago tradition, and he knew he'd return happy to the small shop in Millport on Monday morning, knowing he'd never have to go back to one of these again. "I don't know," he said. "You met Sophia. That sounds promising." Keanu couldn't help smiling. "Yeah, true. I just feel bad for you two." "Don't be daft, son," said Barney, clapping him in the shoulder. "Loved the walk in the hills this morning. Can do the same tomorrow. Food's great. You don't actually have to listen to any of these idiots talking if you don't want to. We got a nice bit of dinner this evening, a walk and breakfast in the morning, and then we can head off back." He stopped. He swallowed. He turned his head. They all stopped. They all swallowed. They all turned their heads. A distant, piercing scream drifting through the long corridors of the hotel from far away. The scream seemed to hang in the air, holding them all prisoner for several seconds, and then it abruptly ended, as though cut short by the swipe of a sharp blade. Silence. Even the poet had stopped talking, something of a rarity for any poet. "Oh, shit," said Keanu, his voice low. "Aye," said Barney darkly. "Oh, shit."